Otis Freeman came up beside the mountain man and leaned on the wall to peer out into the gathering shadows. Fires were visible all along the Blackfoot lines. They'd be cooking their supper soon.
I haven't had a chance to tell you. I'm sorry about your friend Harrigan. I talked to him some. He seemed like a good fella.
He was. I didn't know him all that well, but you could count on him in a fight, and he was always ready with a smile, even in the middle of trouble. I'll miss him.
Too bad we can't bury him, and the others.
6 men had lost their lives in the battle. The survivors couldn't venture outside the walls to lay him to rest, not with the war party waiting only a few hundred yards away. So the bodies had been wrapped in blankets and put in the trading post's root cellar. It was a temporary solution, and one surely destined not to work out well, but it was the best they could do.
We'll make sure they're tended to proper once this is all over.
They'll have a nice funeral pyre when the whole place is burned down around us.
You folks give up too easy. As long as a man's still alive and can fight, he's got a chance, even if it ain't much of one. I'll take a slim chance over none any damn day of the week.
Yeah. You're right about that, I suppose. I sort of wish I'd never signed on to help Wiley bring those horses out here. It seemed like a good idea at the time.
Two of you old friends?
No, not really. We've known each other for a few years. I drove some now and then for his freight line. This was a chance to do something more than just working for wages. I figured we could maybe make a real business out of it. You know, bring a couple herds out every year. Wouldn't be too long until our horses were all over the frontier.
Oh, it wasn't a bad idea. Maybe it'll work out yet.
We'll see. We've got to live through the next few days first.
Time crawled. Somehow, minutes became hours, and hours became days. Tension so thick hung in the air over the fort that sometimes it seemed difficult to breathe. It was hard to believe that men could be bored while waiting to die, but that was exactly what happened to the defenders of Fort Gifford. Unfortunately, over the next several days, any time the boredom was broken meant bloody fighting and more death. The Blackfoot attacked at least once a day, showering arrows into the fort until it seemed impossible they would have any left. Indeed, as the number of shafts decreased with each attack, Preacher began to think maybe they really were running out. They couldn't recover the ones that fell inside the walls, and surely they couldn't have an endless supply. Several times, the warriors tried to set the fort on fire. Preacher and the other riflemen on the parapet drove them off with deadly accurate shooting. In each battle, though, several defenders died or were wounded so badly that they were out of the fight. Judith Langley was kept busy not only cooking, but also tending the injured men as best she could. It was probably good for her. Having so much to do wouldn't allow for time to be scared. For her sake, Preacher hoped that was true, at least part of the time. The men had a gaunt, hollow-eyed look about them. No one was sleeping much. Only about 40 men were left alive in the fort, and guards had to be posted around the clock. There was no telling when the Blackfoot might attack again. Preacher was standing on the trading post's porch drinking a cup of coffee when Ethan Langley came up to him. The bourgeois's face was haggard and drawn. He looked like he'd lost 20 pounds in the past week.
Another few days and that boat will be here. I'm starting to think we might make it after all, Preacher.
Well, now you don't even know for sure the boat's coming.
It was supposed to be here sometime between the 17th and the 24th. Today is the 15th.
Well, that's if it don't get delayed somehow or the trip wasn't canceled completely.
The company would have sent word.
Which wouldn't have gotten here yet either.
You're the one who told everybody not to give up hope.
Preacher smiled humorlessly and shrugged.
Yeah, you're right about that. I reckon the strain's starting to get to me.
I don't believe that. You're Preacher.
Yeah, well, that don't make me no damn miracle worker. Oh, I'm sorry. Too little sleep and too much killing. Starts to wear on a body after a while.
Yes, indeed it does. I'm amazed we're all holding up as well as we are.
What about Miss Langley? Every time I see her, she's got a smile on her face, but she must be about wore out.
Yes, she's been my rock. But even a rock will wear down eventually. At least Cortland has kept his distance. I have to be thankful for that. With everything else that's going on, Judith doesn't need him annoying her, too.
Preacher didn't say anything. From the sound of it, Judith still hadn't mentioned the confrontation with Cortland. But it was the smart thing to do. Cortland had been in the thick of every battle, and Preacher didn't think the man had gotten so much as a scratch. Well, that was the way it seemed to work sometimes. Lady Luck watched over one man while turning her back on another, and there was no real rhyme or reason to her choices. Not all of the men Cortland had brought with him had been so fortunate. Borland was dead, skewered by an arrow during one of the ruckuses, and Prince was laid up with a bad wound in his leg. Freeman, Elkins, and Dalton were still able to fight, although they had picked up a few nicks and bruises.
If we do get through this, we'll have Miss Langley to thank for some of it. She's been an inspiration to everybody.
I agree, although she's too modest to see it that way.
Langley glanced up at the sky.
The sun'll be going down in another hour or so. You think they'll attack again tonight?
I reckon you can count on it.
Darkness had fallen. The Blackfoot had demonstrated they were willing to attack at any hour of the day or night, so the defenders couldn't let down their guard for a minute. Preacher was on the parapet near the gates, with every sense on alert, when Otis Freeman approached him.
Preacher, have you seen Wiley?
You mean here lately? No, can't say as I have. Not since sometime this afternoon, anyway.
It's been a couple hours since I saw him. I looked around the fort, and I can't find him.
Well, he's got to be here somewhere.
Maybe. Maybe not.
What? You're thinking he might have gone over the wall and took off for the Tall and Uncut?
I'd hate to think that he'd abandon us, but if he's not here...
There's no way he made it through all them Blackfoot without him catching him. If he went out there, he's likely dead by now. Either that or they're saving him.
Why would they do that?
Put on a show for us. They might tie him to a post, build a fire at his feet, and burn him that way. Or they could just build a fire and hang him upside down over it so his brain cooks until his head explodes. Or just torture him for 5 or 6 hours so we hear him screaming the whole time. There's not much telling what they might decide to do. But you can count on it being pretty bad.
Good Lord! I hope he's still here, and I just couldn't find him. I wouldn't wish something like that on my worst enemy.
No, neither would I. If they got him and they try something like that, I'll do my best to put a bullet in his head. That'd put him out of his misery and cheat those varmints out of their sport.
Maybe it won't come to that. I'm gonna go look around some more.
You do that. Hope you find him.
Preacher had a hunch Freeman wouldn't be able to locate Cortland, though. There weren't that many places inside the fort for someone to be. More time passed. When Preacher's shift on guard duty was over, he climbed down from the parapet. The past few days he'd taken to sleeping on the ground next to the fur warehouse instead of in the extra room in the bourgeois living quarters. With a ladder only a few steps away, he could get back on the parapet in a hurry any time trouble broke out. At the moment, despite the nearly non-stop exhaustion that gripped all the defenders, he was more hungry than sleepy. So he headed for the trading post, where Judith Langley kept a fire burning in the stove and a pot of stew simmering on it nearly all the time. Preacher thought he might get a bowl of it before he turned in. When he came into the trading post, he didn't see Judith, or anyone else for that matter. It was possible she was over at the barracks where the wounded men had been taken, changing their dressings or using a cool rag to wipe the foreheads of the men who had fevers. The door into the living quarters was slightly ajar.
You have to come with me, Judith. You don't have any choice. It's your only chance. Otherwise, you'll die tonight.
You're mad! Wiley, for God's sake, what have you done?
Preacher shoved the door open.
Yeah, Cortland. I want to know that, too. What are you up to, you son of a...
They're here! The Indians are inside the wall!
In the split second, Cortland whirled around to face him, and all hell broke loose outside. Preacher knew the horse trader had something to do with what was happening. Preacher grabbed one of the pistols tucked behind his belt. At the same instant, Cortland's hand shot out and snatched up the oil lamp burning on the table beside him.
Damn you!
He threw it at the mountain man. Preacher flung up his left arm to shield his face. The lamp broke, sending blazing oil cascading down his arm. The sleeve of his buckskin shirt protected his flesh, but he still felt the fiery heat. Cortland barreled into him, dragging Judith behind. The two vanished through the door leading into the main room of the trading post. Preacher scrambled to his feet and slapped out the flames still burning on his oil-soaked sleeve. Then he jerked a second pistol from behind his belt and rushed to the door. Stepping onto the porch was like stepping into a nightmare. The barracks of the wounded men was ablaze. The Blackfoot seemed everywhere, laying waste to the defenders with tomahawks, knives, clubs. The gates stood wide open, so there was no doubt how the warriors had gotten into the fort. Despite being overrun and outnumbered, the men were still putting up a fight. Preacher saw desperate struggles going on everywhere he looked. Before plunging into the melee himself, he saw Otis Freeman on top of the parapet, using a broken rifle to flail away at the Blackfoot surrounding him. Blood streamed from a dozen wounds, but Freeman stood tall, swinging the rifle, breaking bones, crushing skulls. But suddenly, Freeman lurched forward and dropped off the parapet. As he fell, Preacher saw the tomahawk lodged in the back of Freeman's head. The weapon had shattered his skull and buried itself in his brain, killing him. Preacher didn't see Cortland or Judith, but he figured they had to be around, unless they had made their way through the chaos and escaped through the gates. But considering at least a couple of hundred bloodthirsty Blackfoot warriors were still outside the fort, Preacher didn't think it was much of an escape. He leaped down from the porch and threw himself into the back. A warrior lunged at him, tomahawk lifted for a killing blow. Preacher raised the pistol in his right hand. He pivoted and fired his left-hand pistol. As half a dozen warriors charged him, Preacher stuck the empty pistols behind his belt and grabbed the other two guns tucked away there. Three Blackfoot went down like they'd been scythed. Preacher didn't wait for the remaining three to attack him. He charged ahead and smashed the empty pistol in his right hand into the nearest man's face. Preacher ducked under a swinging tomahawk and swept the pistol in his left hand up and around. The final warrior thrust his knife at Preacher. Twisting away, the mountain man couldn't fully avoid it. He felt the blade's fiery bite as it went into his side, but the wound was a shallow one. Before the warrior could launch a backhanded stroke with the knife, Preacher drove his heel into the man's right kneecap, snapping it. Preacher brought his foot down on the man's neck. The Blackfoot continued to swarm over the compound, wantonly killing every white man they found. It was murder, pure and simple, and Preacher knew there was no way he could stop it. All he could do was take as many of the attackers to hell with him as he could. Except he realized he didn't have to go to hell as he stowed the empty guns behind his belt, snatched a couple of fallen tomahawks from the ground, and waded into the slaughter. Hell had come to Fort Gifford. At that moment, in that place, the entire universe was a massacre. Preacher's massacre. He embraced it because there was nothing left to do. Suddenly tackled from behind, he was knocked off his feet and driven to the ground. He twisted around to strike out.
Preacher, no, it's me, Ethan Langley.
Finally realizing who the man was, the madness holding Preacher in its grip broke. The bourgeois clutched at his arm.
Have you seen Judith?
She was with Cortland. Cortland, what?
I think he let the Blackfoot in here.
The two men were sprawled on the ground near the trading post. It was a momentary island in the sea of bloody chaos. Bodies, red and white alike, littered the ground around them. The stockade walls were on fire, and so were most of the buildings inside the compound. It was only a fluke the raiders had turned their attention elsewhere for the moment. The respite surely wouldn't last long.
You were shouting and hitting the air with those tomahawks. You'd already killed all the savages within reach.
Yeah, I reckon I went a mighty loco, but I'm all right now. In fact, I'm thinking we're gonna make our stand here, Langley. You still got kegs of gunpowder in the trading post, don't you?
A dozen or so, but I have to find Judith.
There's nothing you can do for her now. Go grab some of those kegs while you got the chance.
What are you gonna...
Just get the goddamn powder!
Langley staggered into the trading post, reappearing a minute later with two wooden kegs tucked under his arms. Preacher took one of them and smashed the top open with a tomahawk. He slung the powder all over the ground in front of the trading post. He took the second keg from Langley.
Go get more.
Preacher supposed the man's brain was too numb to do anything except follow orders. He threw the contents of the second keg near that of the first, using the last of it to lay a short trail to the base of the porch steps. Suddenly, he spotted a familiar figure striding arrogantly across the compound. A grin appeared on Preacher's face.
Red Knife!
The Blackfoot war chief heard him and turned. His face twisted in hatred.
Kill him!
A dozen warriors raced toward the trading post. Preacher pulled one of the empty pistols from behind his belt and knelt as if he were praying. Actually, he cocked the gun and rested the hand holding it on the ground, waiting until the charging warriors, bristling with knives and tomahawks, were almost on top of him. He pulled the trigger and the flint struck. The warriors charging through it suddenly found themselves engulfed in fire. Preacher leaped back onto the steps as Langley emerged from the trading post carrying two more powder kegs. Preacher grabbed one and heaved it into the flame. Langley followed suit. Preacher was in Hades, all right, and he figured he'd soon be shaking hands with the devil, a devil named Red Knife. But it was not to be. A tomahawk came streaking through the flames and smashed into Preacher's head. Darkness claimed him. Preacher couldn't see anything, crowded as he was by all the stuff around him. Through a sudden red glow, he caught a glimpse of a lifeless eye only a couple of inches from him. The dead man's face was pressed right up against his. In fact, he was completely surrounded by dead men. It took all of Preacher's iron will to keep from shouting in horror as he figured out he was lying in a pile of corpses, awash in the blood leaking from them. His stomach lurched. He fought to control it. He couldn't allow himself to be sick any more than he had allowed himself to cry out. The faint reddish glow revealing Preacher's grim surroundings faded, and he realized someone must have walked past carrying a torch. A member of Red Knife's war party, no doubt. No white man would be walking around unmolested. The Blackfoot must have believed he was already dead, or they would have taken quick steps to ensure it was true.
Oh, that tomahawk. Gashing the scalp always bleeds like a son of a gun. I must have looked so dead they picked me up and tossed me in a pile with the other corpses. Damn. Does that even make any sense?
The tomahawk might not have killed him, but it had given him such a wallop it was hard to think straight. His brain wandered back a few moments to what happened before the tomahawk.
I wonder if there ain't a white man walking around inside this fort right now, unharmed by the Blackfoot.
Wiley Cortland. Preacher had no proof Cortland had let the warriors into the fort. But if he hadn't, why had he gone to Judith and told her she had to go with him? That she had to get out of the fort right away or else she would die tonight?
Cortland knew what was going to happen.
Even in Preacher's muddled state, he knew that made the most sense. Cortland's earlier disappearance from the fort had to be considered, too. Had he gotten out and gone to make his deal with Red Knife, then slipped back to get Judith? That seemed feasible, although there were plenty of blank spots that needed to be filled in. Preacher forced his thoughts toward a much more basic problem.
How in the hell am I gonna get out of here?
Sooner or later, the Blackfoot would get around to burning the pile of bodies in which he lay. He had to escape before that happened, which meant he had to get out from under the stifling weight. If he could reach the open, he could make a run for it. The odds would be against him, but it was still dark. At least he would have a chance of giving him the slip. And a chance, however slim, was all he wanted. Preacher began by moving his arms, slowly, carefully. It was doubtful the Blackfoot were watching the bodies very closely, since they believed everybody in the pile was dead. But they might notice if those corpses started shifting. Preacher moved an inch at a time, knowing slow progress ought to be invisible in the flickering light from the flames of burning buildings. He forced down a primitive impulse to scream.
Slow and steady.
Preacher had never undertaken a grimmer task than crawling through corpses stacked like cordwood. Since he couldn't see much of anything, he hoped he was working his way toward the end of the pile, not burrowing deeper into the charnel mound. When the crimson glow of firelight reappeared and grew stronger, he knew he was getting closer to the edge. When Preacher got to the edge of the pile, he was shocked to find out that Langley was still alive and standing before Red Knife. Langley was not only still alive, he was furious. Then, Preacher saw the man who had caused all this suffering and death step up to Langley.
Let him go. I'm not afraid of him.
Ethan, no!
Though Preacher couldn't see her, he knew the voice belonged to Judith. Cortland would have seen that she stayed alive if the horse trader had made a deal with Red Knife, as Preacher suspected. The war chief might have honored Cortland's wishes. But Cortland was taking an awful chance. Even if Red Knife had given his word, he might consider it meaningless since Cortland was white. Red Knife could turn on him and slaughter them both.
A chance to kill you, that's all I ask, Cortland. Give me a knife, or even just my bare hands. I don't care, just give me a chance.
Why would I do that? I have what I want. Judith is mine now.
No, I'm not, and I never will be.
Do you know why I asked Red Knife to have his men spare your life, Langley? I want to kill you myself. You've had it coming for years, and finally, I'm going to rid myself of you once and for all.
A fair fight, an unfair fight, I don't care. If I get my hands on you, I'll kill you.
I'm not that big a fool.
Cortland shoved Judith toward Red Knife.
If you'll hold the lady for me, Chief.
End this, Cortland. It does my people no good.
Oh, don't worry. I'm going to finish it right now.
Red Knife took hold of the woman's arms from behind.
I hate you! I'll never love you, Wiley. Never. I'll never forgive you for what you've done.
Then I can't make things any worse between us, can I? Still, you'll cooperate with me, Judith. If you want to live, you'll have no choice.
I don't want to live. Not after this.
Judith, no. You have to survive somehow.
Time to end this.
Cortland drew a pistol from his belt and cocked it. Preacher tried to pull his right leg up, but suddenly it wouldn't budge. His ankle was trapped in the angle between a couple of dead limbs. It was like the corpses had latched onto him and didn't want to let him go. But he was more horrified by what he witnessed next. Unable to do anything except lie there and watch events unfold.
Burn in hell, Langley.
Judith twisted enough to ram her knee into Red Knife's groin. She pulled free and dashed toward her husband. The ball from Wiley's gun struck Judith in the back, passed all the way through her body, and burst out the front of her dress in a spray of blood.
Ethan!
No!
Langley lunged at Cortland, his arms outstretched and his fingers hooked into claws. At the same time, Preacher gave his leg a violent wrench and it popped loose from the macabre grip of the corpses. Covered in blood from head to foot, he hauled himself out of the pile and stumbled to his feet.
Cortland!
Cortland's head jerked toward Preacher, a man who looked like he just climbed up out of a grave to come back and avenge the dead. That distraction gave Langley the chance to grab Cortland by the neck. For a second, it looked like Langley might get his wish and Cortland would die at his hands. But the Blackfoot War Chief stepped in and plunged the knife into Langley's back. Langley looked around and crawled toward his wife with a handle of the knife still protruding from his back. He stretched out a hand toward her, but slumped down dead before he could touch her. His hand rested on the ground, reaching for her.
Kill the mountain man!
Several warriors charged toward Preacher. Preacher's brain worked as swiftly as it ever had, and he quickly realized that the several warriors between him and Cortland eliminated his chance to kill the horse trader. He also realized that simplified things. He had to live. He broke into a run. Arrows whipped past his head, but he was moving so fast none of the archers could draw bead on him. The Missouri River was 100 yards away. A Preacher ran toward it, arms and legs pumping and flying. Suddenly, the river was in front of him, its surface silvery in the moonlight instead of muddy. Icy shock careened through his body, numbing it from every pain. The frigid sensation braced him, cleared his mind. He stroked with his arms and kicked his feet while still under the surface. It was too dark to see much of anything, but he sensed disturbances in the water around him, and he knew the Blackfoot were firing arrows at the spot he had just disappeared. He swam away from it, but the arrows followed. They were firing blindly, but they weren't missing by much. Preacher held his breath, kept swimming, trusted to luck. Gradually, fewer and fewer arrows fell around him. Preacher gave thought to Red Knife's next move. He might send men along both sides of the river to search for the mountain man. In that case, Preacher would just have to elude him. But on the other hand, the war chief might not want to go to that much trouble. He had destroyed the fort and killed dozens of the hated white men already. It might be enough to satisfy him for a while. Either way, Preacher was willing to pit his skills against those of the enemy. He was patient and he was stubborn, and he was going to get away. He could feel it in his bones, although he couldn't feel much of anything else in that icy water. But even if he escaped, it wasn't over. Far from it. By morning, Preacher was miles downriver, chilled through and through, unable to go any farther. He crawled out onto the bank and let the rising sun warm him. He appeared to be alone in the vast wilderness surrounding him. Either Red Knife had decided Preacher was dead, or he didn't care one way or the other. All that really mattered was that no Blackfoot were waiting to kill him. But it didn't mean they might not come along later. He staggered to his feet and looked around for a place to hole up. He found it in a narrow crevice in the side of a bluff about 500 yards away from the river. It was barely big enough for him, but he was able to sit with his back against the rough dirt wall and rest. He meant to keep watch, but his eyes closed and he slept. When he woke up, the sun was low in the sky. It was late in the day. The Preacher was ravenously hungry. With his sore muscles protesting, he climbed out of the crevice and looked around for something to eat. He found some tiny bitter berries in a clump of brush and he gobbled them up.
Better than nothing.
In the last of the fading sunlight, he stripped off his blood-stained clothes and took stock of his physical condition. His rangy, powerful body was marked all over with gashes and bruises. The knife wound in his side had crusted over, and he hoped it wouldn't fester. He didn't have any whiskey to pour on it or any herbs with which to make a poultice. He was still starving, and he was beaten up, and he'd lost quite a bit of blood. His muscles trembled from weakness. He wouldn't stand a chance against a Blackfoot boy, let alone a full-grown warrior. But that didn't stop a grin from stretching across his bearded face as he climbed back into the ragged buckskins. He was alive. And Wiley Cortland?
That son of a bitch doesn't know it yet. But he's dead.
By the time another day and a half had passed, some of Preacher's strength had returned. It wasn't the first time he'd been on his own and unarmed in the wilderness. He had rigged a snare and managed to catch a rabbit. Afterward, Preacher started back upriver to the fort, reaching what was left of it a little before dusk. Piles of ashes and rubble marked the location of the buildings, and charred lines on the ground showed where the walls had been. Dead horses lay rotting, but a huge pile of bones testified grimly as to how the bodies of the defenders had been burned, just as Preacher expected. Somewhere in that pile were the remains of Ethan and Judith Langley. At the very least, Preacher hoped they were together. He sat on the riverbank, with his back to the scene of carnage and destruction.
Horse?
Horse!
The stallion emerged from the brush on the far side of the river, and Preacher's heart leaped even more when he saw the big, shaggy shape beside Horse. Both of his trail partners had survived the massacre. They plunged into the river and swam across to him, shaking themselves off as they emerged from the water. Preacher hugged him, Horse bumped his shoulder happily, and Dog licked the mountain man's bearded face. That reunion made Preacher feel better than he had any time since before the fort fell. He slept that night with Dog curled against his side. In the morning, in the rubble of one of the buildings, Preacher found a bone-handled knife that had survived the blaze fairly well. With it, he carved a spear, and for breakfast, he and the big cur had roasted fish. Something was nagging at him. The night before, he had spotted an orange glow in the sky to the west. It was faint, but he saw it well enough to know a big fire was burning there. Armed with the knife and the makeshift spear, he wanted to see what had caused the glow. He was as close to a purely primitive state as he had been in a long time. Almost everything about civilization had been stripped from him. He might as well have been one of the ancient denizens of this land, one of its original settlers. He had ancient cunning as well, and when his instincts warned him to be careful, he paid attention to them. Dropping to hands and knees, he crawled up a hill until he could peer over its grassy crest. An Indian encampment was below, several hundred yards away. It was no tribal village, though. Rather, the camp of a war party pausing to let its wounded members heal some before resuming their journey home. Preacher's eyes narrowed as he spotted the tall, proud, arrogant figure of Red Knife striding around the camp.
Well, how about that?
The universe appeared to have a way of balancing itself out, at least every now and then. Preacher watched the Blackfoot camp for a long time, but he didn't see Wiley Cortland among the warriors. Had Red Knife betrayed him and killed him? Or had Cortland left, his horses gone, and Judith lost to him forever? There was only one way to find out.
Ask Red Knife.
That would mean slipping into the camp, capturing the war chief and getting back out again without being discovered. After the ordeal he had been through, Preacher wasn't up to that. And there was no telling how long the Blackfoot would stay there before pulling out again.
Damn.
He decided to start back to the fort to figure out his next move. When he got there, the supply boat was tied up at the riverbank, and the men it brought were standing around, staring in horror and confusion at what was left of Fort Gifford. Soon he was sitting at a small table in the captain's cabin, where Robert Creighton tipped the bottle and let amber liquid pour into the tin cup of coffee in front of Preacher.
That ought to give you some strength. My God, what an ordeal you've been through.
It's pretty bad.
Captain Creighton, a tall, lanky, balding man, shook his head in amazement.
I'm not sure there's another man alive who could have lived through it.
Captain wasn't a military title in this case. Creighton worked for the American Fur Company, just like Ethan Langley had. He was in charge of the supply boat Stag that had come up the Missouri, past Fort Union, and all the way to Fort Gifford. The boat was crowded. Between the crew and the fur trappers who'd bought passage on it, trust the company to find ways to make money by any means they could, 30 men had come up river on the Stag. Crates of provisions, ammunition, beaver traps, axes, and other supplies were stacked on the deck. Most important to Preacher, the four cannon Langley had told them about were lashed to the deck as well, two on each side of the boat to balance their weight.
Oh, I had a good reason for staying alive. If Wiley Cortland's still breathing, I aim to find him and see to it he pays for what he'd done.
You have no proof this man Cortland was in league with the savages. In fact, given everything that happened while he was bringing that herd of horses to Fort Gifford, it would seem more likely they were mortal enemies.
Yeah, well, I reckon they were then. Redknife hadn't had much luck getting past the fort's walls, though. He might have been willing to strike a bargain with Cortland and let him live in return for his help getting inside the fort.
Well, I suppose. How do you propose to find out?
I'm going to ask Redknife right before I kill him.
You plan a clandestine mission into that Indian camp?
Nope. I plan to blow the hell out of that Indian camp. Or should I say, you're going to blow the hell out of it.
You mean to launch an attack on the Blackfoot with those cannon? Oh, I'm not sure I can allow that. They belong to the American Fur Company.
So did Fort Gifford. Redknife burned it to the ground. You know, I got a hunch the company would want you to settle that score. And I want a distraction so I can get into the camp and get my hands on Redknife. Can you do that for me, Captain?
Creighton sat there without saying anything for a long moment. It was clear he considered Preacher's request a dilemma. He was the sort of man who liked to have specific orders before he did anything. Bold action didn't come naturally to him. He had seen that pile of bones, though, and he'd seen the rest of the devastation left behind by the war party. Finally, he nodded.
I'll help you. I don't know exactly what it is you want me to do, though.
I'll explain the whole thing to you.
Dawn had not yet arrived the next morning when Preacher knelt at the top of the rise overlooking the Blackfoot camp. The eastern sky was gray, though, and it provided enough light for him to see the warriors beginning to stir. He'd worried they'd be gone, but that wasn't the case. They had waited a day too long. He glanced to his left. The Missouri River ran there about a quarter mile away. Captain Creighton would be maneuvering the Stag into position. The plan called for him to shut down the boat's engine while it was still far enough away that the Indians couldn't hear it. From there, men would wade ashore with heavy ropes and haul the vessel upriver against the current. It would be hard work, but it could be done. They were more than willing to make the effort after hearing about the massacre carried out at Fort Gifford. Preacher looked the other way at the 10 men who had come with him. He hadn't had any trouble getting volunteers. They were all fur trappers, and they knew they wouldn't be safe as long as Red Knife was around. With Preacher leading them, they would hit the camp from one side while Creighton bombarded it from the other with those cannons. The mountain man knew there was a chance Red Knife would be killed in the barrage. If that happened, he might never find out what had happened to Wiley Cortland. But the souls of the men who had died inside the fort cried out for vengeance, and Preacher was going to give it to them. Red Knife's war party would never again carry out such wanton slaughter. Dog sat beside Preacher, waiting.
I know you're anxious to get down there, old fella. So am I. Won't be much longer now.
He had borrowed a rifle from a man on the boat and taken a couple of pistols from a crate bound for Fort Gifford. He still had the bone-handled knife he had found in the rubble, too.
It felt good to be armed again.
The sky had started to take on a rosy tint. It brightened. Preacher and his companions waited. He kept looking toward the river, waiting for some sign of the stag. If anything had happened to delay the boat, or worse still, if it had run aground, the plan would be ruined. Even though the war party appeared to have shrunk to half the size it had been when the fort was destroyed, it was still much too big for a small force to attack without the help of the cannon. Suddenly, as red and gold continued to splash across the heavens, heralding the start of a new day, the prow of the stag nosed into view around the bend just below the Blackfoot camp. The men hauling the vessel were on the river's south bank. The Missouri was wide, but not so wide that it would make any difference. The camp was well within range of those big guns. Creighton's crew had turned them, so they all pointed toward the enemy. The captain, like Preacher, had served in the War of 1812, and he knew how to handle the cannon.
All right, boys. Won't be much longer now.
Several of the Blackfoot were awake now and moving around, but they weren't paying attention to what was happening on the river. The stag seemed to inch forward with maddening slowness, but finally, it was in position. The men holding the ropes tied them to trees and scrambled back aboard. Preacher couldn't make out the details from so far away and in the light of dawn, but he knew the men designated as gunners were getting ready to touch off the charges.
Come on!
Preacher surged to his feet and lunged down the slope toward the camp. Chaos reigned in the Blackfoot camp. Men died without ever knowing what was going on. Death seemed to come from nowhere, striking them down left and right. By the time the warriors finally realized where the attack was coming from, Preacher's companions were among them, opening fire, cutting them down. Preacher headed directly to where he'd seen Red Knife the previous evening. Along the way, he emptied his rifle and pistols, and with each shot, another Blackfoot fell. He didn't take the time to reload.
Do not panic! The white man will die!
Red Knife!
The war chief whirled toward Preacher. Surprise etched on Red Knife's face as he recognized Preacher. But that reaction lasted only a second before he lifted the tomahawk in his hand and charged toward the mountain man. Preacher threw his empty pistols aside and jerked the bone-handled knife from his belt. Darting aside as the tomahawk swept down at his head, he met Red Knife's assault with an attack of his own. The blade flashed out and cut deeply across Red Knife's chest. Then the tomahawk smashed into Preacher's side where he'd been wounded in the earlier battle. Preacher grabbed the front of the war chief's buckskin shirt with his free hand and planted a foot in Red Knife's belly. The Blackfoot crashed down. Preacher was on him in the blink of an eye, holding the blade against his throat. All it would take to send the razor-sharp edge slicing through flesh was just a little more pressure. But he held off, and he rested a knee on the inside of Red Knife's right elbow, forcing the war chief to let go of the tomahawk.
Where's Cortland?
The white traitor! Gone!
Kill him?
Why? He kept his end of a bargain, but still he lost all he wanted.
The white woman was dead in his hand. Nothing I could do to him was worse than that.
Which way did he go?
East. Will you go after him?
You're damn right I will.
Then he will die. More than ever, you are the ghost killer.
Suddenly, Red Knife lunged up from the ground. The blade cut deep into his neck.
Damn!
Unable to live with the shame of his defeat, Red Knife had chosen his own way out. But it didn't really matter. He'd beaten Preacher to the throat cutting by only a moment. Preacher wiped off the bloody knife on the war chief's buckskins, retrieved his guns, then stood up and tucked them into his belt. The bombardment had devastated the camp, and Preacher and the men with him had finished the job. Blackfoot bodies lay everywhere. Some members of the war party might have survived and fled, but surely not many. Those who had would carry the tale of the thundering death that had come in the dawn. One massacre for another. And sometime in the future, another war party would wipe out another fort to avenge what had happened here. On and on, a never-ending cycle of violence, stretching all the way back to the dim, misty beginnings of mankind. Where it would end, Preacher had no idea. All he knew was that his particular part of the cycle wouldn't end until he found Wiley Cortland. Fort Union was larger and more substantial than Fort Gifford had been, with thick earthen walls that wouldn't burn, tall blockhouses to protect them. The bourgeois didn't live in the back of a log trading post, but rather in an actual two-story house with whitewashed walls and a red roof. The land on which the outpost sat, at the confluence of the Missouri and Yellowstone rivers, was considered to be Assiniboine territory, and the tribe got along well with the white men who'd built the fort. Various bands visited frequently, setting up their lodges outside the walls and making a holiday of it. It was as far west as the American Fur Company had been able to penetrate safely, as the destruction of Fort Gifford proved. But none of that mattered to Preacher. To him, Fort Union was just the starting point in his search for Cortland. He had come back downriver on the Stag. Captain Creighton had balked a little at taking horse aboard, but in the end, he agreed. The boat returned with the same cargo it had left with. There was no place to leave it upriver, although some of the trappers bound for Fort Gifford had bought supplies before they scattered to seek their fortunes in fur. Standing on the dock built out into the river with the boat tied to it, Creighton spoke to Preacher.
I have to go talk to the bourgeois about what happened at Gifford so he can write a letter back to the company and let them know. I don't suppose you'd want to come with me.
You saw what was left. You can explain it all just as good as I can.
I wasn't there. You were.
Blackfoot got in, killed everybody, and burned down the fort. You can't get much more simple than that.
I suppose. But he may insist on talking to you anyway since you're the only survivor.
Well, maybe I'll be here, maybe I won't. And I ain't the only survivor. Dog and horse lived through it too. But I don't reckon they'll feel any more like talking than I do. Come on, fellas.
Preacher left Creighton and walked through the open gates into the fort, with Dog beside him and horse trailing behind. A long building to the right ran the entire length of the wall. It served as trading post, tavern, and barracks for the men. Preacher intended to ask in there if anybody had seen Cortland. With hair so fair it was almost white, most folks would remember him. Preacher tied horse to a hitch rack in front of the tavern and went inside. He'd been hoping to pick up Cortland's trail there. He hadn't expected to find the man himself. Cortland was sitting alone in a rear corner of the big smoky room. A jug sat on the table in front of him, but he didn't appear to be drunk. He looked like a living dead man, gaunt and hollow-eyed. He saw Preacher at the same time the mountain man spotted him. Preacher tensed, expecting Cortland to reach for the pistol laying on the table beside the jug. But Cortland didn't move, except to cock one white eyebrow in surprise. And then he smiled. Preacher almost lost control of his emotions then. It would have been simple enough to pull both pistols from behind his belt, walk up to Cortland, and blow the man to hell. But that wouldn't provide him with any answers to the question still puzzling him. More than a dozen men were in the tavern, but none seemed to notice the looks passing between Preacher and Cortland. Preacher walked across the room to the horse trader.
Red Knife assured me you had to be dead. He said you were badly wounded. And his men were bound to hit you with their arrows when you tried to get away in the river. Somehow, though, I didn't believe him. I had a feeling I'd be seeing you again.
In this life or the next. If I'd been dead, I would have been waiting for you at the gates of hell.
I don't doubt it for a moment. How did you survive?
Divine providence.
Cortland looked puzzled.
The good Lord must have kept me alive so I can kill you.
That could be. Although this...
Cortland looked around at the inside of the tavern.
This is already hell on earth, isn't it?
Preacher used a foot to pull back one of the empty chairs at the table, and he sat down.
You know, I reckon any place would seem like hell on earth to you after what you did. You know how much blood you got on your hands, Cortland?
I only care about some of it.
Judas.
I never meant for her to be hurt. I just wanted what was best for her. You can't see that, can you, Preacher?
You didn't have any right to decide what was best for her.
But I loved her. Don't you see? Of course I had the right.
So you were responsible for the deaths of dozens of men, all because a woman picked somebody else.
The face that launched 1,000 ships and burnt the topless towers of Ilium. Although you don't know what I'm talking about, do you?
Don't sell me short, Wiley. I may not have read Homer, but a friend of mine can quote him all day and half the night if he's of mine, too. Name of Aldi.
A learned man from the sound of it. Well, then, I suppose he might understand what a man will do for love.
You didn't do anything for love. You did it for hate. I just ain't sure how you did it, though.
And that's puzzling you. I can tell. It really wasn't difficult. You gave me the idea.
Me?
That's right. When you went over the wall on that rope, it was easy enough for me to do the same thing. I was supposed to be on guard duty that night. Instead, I just left.
9 times out of 10, the Blackfoot would have killed you out of hand.
Maybe. But I was desperate. And I was going to die anyway when the fort fell. When I asked to see Red Knife, several warriors took me to him. And I made my proposition. I'd leave the rope down when I snuck back into the fort. His men could climb up and hide in the blockhouse where I was posted and wait until they were ready to strike.
Wait a minute. There were always 2 men in those blockhouses.
Of course there were. I took care of the man who was on duty with me.
Oh, you killed him, you mean?
Slit his throat. Couldn't have him see me coming and going now, could I?
You let those warriors in and... nobody noticed them until they were opening the gates. That the way it worked, Wiley?
Exactly. And Red Knife had a large force ready to rush the gates as soon as they were open. You know the rest.
And in return?
Judith and I were to get safe passage out of there, to wherever I wanted to go.
Did you really think she wouldn't have told anybody what you'd done?
She would have had to rely on me for her safety. Besides, she would have come to love me. She always loved me. Somehow Langley just blinded her to that fact.
Mister, you're as crazy as a man can be. You never would have got away with it.
Cortland reached out lazily and picked up the jug of whiskey.
I guess we'll never know, will we?
Suddenly, Wiley exploded out of his chair and swung the jug as hard as he could at Preacher's head. The mountain man was ready. He jerked backward, and the jug passed harmlessly in front of his face. Preacher surged to his feet, knife in hand. Cortland snatched the pistol from the tabletop. Preacher felt the hot sting of burning powder against his cheek. and then he struck. Cortland stood with the smoking pistol in his hand and slowly looked down at the bone handle of the knife sticking out from his chest.
You done me yet another favor, my friend.
I ain't your friend, and you can tell it to the devil.
Cortland's body twisted, landed on its side, and toppled onto the table. Preacher reached down to pull the knife free, but then he stopped. That blade was right where it was supposed to be, in the traitor's heart. He left it there and walked out of the tavern. The First Mountain Man 19, Preacher's Massacre, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2012, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication prohibited. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, Eric Mesner, Thomas Keegan, Kimberly Gilbert, James Keegan, Jonathan Watkins, Michael John Casey, David Harris, Richard Rowan, Michael Glenn, James Lewis, Scott McCormick, Terrence Aselford, David Coyne, Joe Brack, Nathaniel Perry, Danny Gavigan, Bradley Smith, and Patrick Stratton. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Patrick Stratton. Graphic audio sound design by Patrick Stratton, Nathaniel Perry, and Dwayne Beeman. Additional music by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Preacher's Massacre, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man, Matt Jensen, the Last Mountain Man, McAllister, the Brothers O'Brien, and Sidewinder series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220. Or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Punk titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We appreciate it.
Well, who the hell are you?
I'm the law. And if you pull that pistol, I'm going to shove it up your ass and pull the trigger.
Graphic Audio presents Shootout at Broken Bow.
Put that thing back in your boot. It's time for you to call it a night. Get your money off the table and clear out of here. Maybe you'll have better luck tomorrow. Kind of an unfriendly way to greet customers.
Well, I'm sorry, mister, but the past few days around here has got a lot of folks kind of edgy when a stranger walks in.
You stay away from my wife!
I don't think so.
Oh, no! Oh!
Shut up!
He was here. Him and three of his boys.
How long ago?
He left here 2 nights ago.
Did he say where he's headed?
Nope, but I didn't ask him.
Did you see which way he headed when he left here?
Yeah, I watched him leave. He started out to the north following Boggy Creek.
So you found us.
What are you aiming to do about it? Seeing as how it's your gun against our four.
Well, that's just it, damn it. If you'd gone the hell back to Texas after you robbed that train at Durant Station, it wouldn't have caused me no problem. But now I ain't by myself. I expect in about 10 or 15 minutes there's gonna be somebody on that hill above us that ain't looking for no payoff.
My God, somebody's gonna pay for this. If I have to ride into Fort Smith and shoot that judge right down in his damn courtroom! It pleasures me to know that you're looking out for us.
Available now in graphic audio.
Now here's a surprise.
Are you alone?
At the moment. Raymond, aren't you supposed to be dead?
Not that I know of.
How did he die?
They said you both died on Olympus Creek. Are we correct in assuming that you are no longer working with the Unified Authority?
Yes, sir. That would be a correct assumption.
Are you fugitives?
Enemies might be a better description.
Arthur tracked the Avatari signal to Boda's galaxy. The Navy should have sent a fleet to destroy their home world by now.
Admiral, we have lost 3/4 of our fleet. We no longer have the firepower we need to carry out our mission. We must return to Earth. We must report that we have located the aliens and request a larger fleet and more troops. As the Master Chief has suggested, we should have our SEALs open the way and send in Marines.
What do you suggest, Master Chief?
Maybe we should return to Earth.
We should return?
We should return and report what we have found. If we attack now and we fail, everything we have learned will be lost. We need to make our report, then launch our attack. We're not here to defeat this enemy. We need to destroy them.
Kill him, Harris! Well, that's an order!
Any last words?
Look, we got all kinds of stuff. I promise, I'll give you half of everything. No, all of it. All of it, I'm good for it.
Sounds like you've got the golden goose. Maybe I should let you go.
Oh, you won't be sorry. You won't. You're gonna be rich.
We meet right here, day after tomorrow. If you're not here with enough swag to fill a transport, you're a dead man. Get out of here.
Why did you let him go?
Didn't you hear? He's going to make me rich.
You're never going to see him again.
Damn straight I'm not going to see him again. Why the spec do you think we evacuated this planet? In 3 hours, the city's going to be dust. And that bastard is going to be dust along with it.
I told you to kill him. You disobeyed a direct order.
Yeah, we need to talk about that. Admiral, I'm relieving you of command.
You're what?
These are dire times, Admiral. And you're not fit for command.
Who the hell do you think you're speaking to?
Admiral Stephen R. Jolly, enlisted man's Navy, retired.
You can't do this!
Captain Holman, how much do you know about ancient Rome?
I know about the Praetorian Guard.
Really? Are you a fan of the classical age?
Not until recently. Am I looking down the barrel of a promotion?
A big one.
What about Admiral Jolly?
Shot by a looter. That was on Gobi. You saw the report.
And now you're placing me in charge?
I have every confidence in you.
Did you have every confidence in Admiral Jolly?
I was obligated to give him a shot because of his seniority.
You killed him.
Not me. It was the looter.
Are you gonna kill me if I screw up?
I need a commander. Are you in or out?
I'm in.
Glad to hear it. You couldn't have taken this post at a better time. We're about to launch a sensitive operation.
Captain! There's something out there!
Where?
I'm changing course!
Shields up!
They're robotic! I'm detecting a signal!
Clear path! We need to break through!
Know this, gentlemen. Our only chance of survival is to establish a colony on a planet that the aliens have already attacked. We are going to colonize Terrano. As many of you know, the Unified Authority patrols that area. Our barges will be vulnerable. The Navy has asked a lot of you over the last month, and you have delivered. Now I'm going to ask even more of you than ever. Some of you will be asked to make the ultimate sacrifice. In order for this plan to work, we will need to draw the UA fleet away from Providence, Cree, and Terra.
That means opening a front that will draw the unified authorities' forces away. We are going to invade Earth.
Stephen L. Kent. Rogue Clone. Book 7. The Clone Redemption.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.